What is the wildest take that you wholeheartedly believe in?
The moon ain't real.
The moon isn't
yes,
real.
The moon isn't real. And I don't have time to explain all of that because I don't need people coming looking at me crazy. But I'm listen, all I'm gonna say is I'm
not the moon landing, just the moon.
The moon. The whole moon. I don't even want to talk about it though.
What's up, baseball fans? Welcome to another episode of Put Me in Coach, a podcast about baseball. You know that sport with the bases, the balls, the strikes, foul balls. It's just a lot of balls. My name is Matt Coggins.
And my name is Carl Mizell. And I looked over and caught a glimpse of one of your news notes, and it was very good. So I can't wait to get
you're talking about.
And I can't wait to talk about it because I have something that's extremely relevant to that exact bit that only has like 7 words.
So yeah.
How are you, friend?
I'm good. I also have it in the notes, but this week I'm starting a new endeavor. For me, it's a brand new experience. I'm trying out fantasy baseball this year. I know so little about it, and I have a couple coworkers that invited me to their league and are helping me figure it out, but I still feel like I am so underwater. I have the benefit of inheriting a guy's team from last year.
Okay.
And thankfully he has drafted Matt Olson, so at least I start off on a really, really good foot with my first baseman. So
okay, so it sounds like a keeper league then.
Yes.
Okay. Keeper league. Is it standard? Like, I mean, if you don't know the answer to the question, just say pass. But is it like a standard scoring, like standard scoring league week to week, or is it matchups?
I think so.
Okay.
I think it's week to week. I think, you know, you get your points for depending on how your players do certain,
right,
you know, stuff.
Yeah.
I'll still learn it. Right now, I'm just kind of focusing on what's the best team I can build. And hopefully trying to draft some Tigers to make it a little more interesting for me. But either way, I don't think I'm making that money, but it'll be a fun experience regardless.
I had to stop because it was just it for my hyperfixation being baseball as I mean, I'm already hyperfixated on baseball enough. But
yes,
then to give me a reason to constantly be staring at my phone, like I can't. I've got enough stuff. I've got 2 podcasts, 2 kids, wife, job, et cetera, et cetera. Like I've already dumped, I think, like 30 hours into MLB The Show 24. To go on top of the 500 and something hours I put into 23. So I don't need more fantasy baseball in my life. The show is enough fantasy baseball for me.
How is that going, by the way?
Oh, it's great. It's so good. It's one of the less toxic fan bases in video game sports. And it's a game that you can get a lot of cool stuff in just from playing it. I haven't played Madden in like 20 years. I never played FIFA. So I know that EA has very predatory like microtransactions, and it's very hard to get the cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the case in the show. You just play the game and the stuff will eventually come to you. I'm having an absolute blast. I recreated my usual uniforms are all ready and ready to go. I got my sweet all black with the red trim road jerseys, and I could talk about it all day. I'll talk about it later in the show notes. TLDR, it's going very well.
Fuck yeah. Well, let's jump right into it. We got a lot of stuff to talk about this week. We're going to talk a little bit about this Seoul series. Seoul is in Korea, that the Dodgers and Padres are playing right now, and why the MLB is starting the season overseas. It's actually more common than you'd think. We are also going to follow up last week's rerun, which was sort of our predictions for what the 2023 season would entail. We're going to review some of those and what we got wrong, what we got right. And then we're going to start our preseason predictions game with Carl's out of the park 25.
They have a weird numbering system.
Weirdly,
yeah, a year,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, they numbered
25.
A year ahead. Yep.
But your simulation from that video game.
Exactly. And for those of you who are into Out of the Park or maybe wanted to try it, it's one of the most deep simulators you're going to find out there. It just came out last week on March 15th. And if you go buy it right now, you can get it for 30% off. Not a sponsor. But if what you like is the granular nuts and bolts of baseball, it is, and I love this stuff, and it's way too deep for me.
Yeah.
And it's also way too much for my old laptop. Even this rudimentary game slows my computer down, but go get it. If that's what you're into, I highly recommend it. It's a great time if you have the patience for it.
And if they want to sponsor us, please do, but
yes, please.
They don't. All right, let's get on to the baseball news. So as I mentioned, the MLB season is kicking off early, and outside the U.S. this week, the Dodgers and Padres are facing off in Seoul, Korea, as part of MLB's newly minted World Tour. L.A. and San Diego also played against Korean ball clubs, the Kiwoom Heroes and the LG Twins, as well as the Korean national team. They both had exhibitions against the Team Korea. That all happened earlier this week, going into Monday. I guess technically, as you're listening to this episode, the game was played overnight. I want to say it's sometime around 1 in the morning our time. But, I think it's a cool element of the season that we're starting over there. And with the Dodgers and the Padres too, for whatever reason, the Padres are the most traveled team. We're going to get into that a little bit later, but there's a lot of fun elements to it. Obviously, Ha-Seong Kim being sort of the new star player of the Padres coming back to Korea after his career there. But also Shohei Ohtani being the worldwide star that he is, making his big splash into yet another country. What do you feel about the Seoul series and our first official games of the season?
There's some weird part of my brain that was trying to find a problem with it. I don't know why. I'm not normally a pessimist like that, especially when it comes to baseball. But the closest I could come was like, I don't like how it's technically the regular season.
Yeah.
That's it. I don't think that it's fair to fly these guys on a 12-hour flight. You know, I know they give them a couple days to acclimate and everything. I just wish they didn't count. Other than that, I think it's an excellent way to highlight to fans in America how international the sport truly is and has become. And also, I think it's fascinating for American fans to see just how crazy Korean folks are for baseball. Like, they go hard. They have the cheer squads. They have songs. I mean, the bat flips and everything. They play baseball the way I would love to see baseball played in America, and it is my goal to one day get over to Korea, and I also want to go see a Nippon an NPB game in Japan at some point in my life.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like it. Like I said, aside from the fact that the games count, which I don't really like, I find no problem with it.
It feels a little weird, especially since most teams are still playing spring training. And when the Dodgers and Padres come back, spring training will be over. So it's feels like they get a little bit of a head start on the season, which doesn't seem fair. But
yeah,
I found it, you know, if you're like me, when 2020 happened and the MLB season was delayed for a couple of months, Korean baseball wasn't. And that was some of the most exciting shit to watch in March and April of 2020, just because it was baseball and it was a different flavor of baseball. And I think everybody in the baseball community got to experience something they hadn't before and pick a team that they'd never had any kind of knowledge of before. And I thought that was really fun. So I think this is cool. I hope they do more games in Korea. I think this is sort of a general shape of how worldwide baseball is going to go in the future. So you don't need to play in, London every couple of years. Do something different. Do something fun.
Yeah. Send it all over the place. Take them to Italy. Take them to the Netherlands. There are professional leagues all over the place, and you can actually simulate with some of those leagues in Out of the Park. This is, again, not an ad. I just wanted to point out that they have a Dutch league. And the first word, it looks like hoofball. I'm poorly pronouncing it, but yeah. Highlight it. Lean into the World Baseball Classic. Almost see this as an extension of it.
Yeah.
And eventually you'll see those players who are playing in the World Baseball Classic playing in the major leagues and then going to those countries.
That's right. We got to talk about Dylan Cease because he's had a hell of a week.
Oh,
yeah. You know, he's been sort of the top talked about trade target for most of this offseason, and he finally got traded. He was rumored for the Yankees, the Astros, the Phillies. The White Sox finally dealt him to the Padres. The Padres seemed like they kind of won this trade. They handed off a couple of lower-level prospects for what was pretty much the White Sox ace, especially after Lance Lynn left, which I don't know if Lynn was really an ace either.
No.
Ace in age, I guess, but not so much quality. Cease is a legitimately good pitcher, which I'm so glad he's no longer a White Sox. But this trade happened as the rest of the Padres are boarding the plane to go to Korea. So he's on this new team, and they want him to come over there and pitch. So the team is trying to struggle to figure out how to get him over there. Plus, they're going to be done with spring training by the time that they get back from Korea. So he's having to pack up his home, pack up his car, figure out housing in San Diego, figure out, you know, how all this shit's going to get traveled around the country. And on top of all of that, he couldn't find his passport. So he's like, oh, shit. Okay, what are we going to do? The team starts sending people out to his home in Georgia. They're sending them to Chicago, see if he's got anything out there. He's tearing up his rental place, trying to figure out if he's got in his property. They're trying to figure out if they can get him a temporary one. Long story short, he does find it. He does make it over there, and he was able to make his debut with the Padres during one of those exhibition games against the LG Twins. He pitched for two innings. He had two strikeouts and one home run. Pretty decent exhibition ball, if I do say so myself.
Absolutely. And to his credit, I hate three-hour flights. I couldn't turn around a 12-hour flight, which the
commercial, by the way, he went commercial. The rest of the team got a private flight.
Exactly. The article, The Athletic had a really interesting article about how this all happened and came about and how it was impressive that he made it out there for that. And of course, the comments were full of douches going, I travel for work all the time. It's not a big deal. Okay. First of all, yes, exactly. That is an appropriate gesture. that I won't recreate, but we've all done it. It's different, okay? Your employer isn't sending people to your childhood home looking for your passport so you can go to Korea and perform as a professional athlete. You're not special. Dylan Cease is special. Don't try to make what Dylan Cease is doing like somehow akin to your 90-minute commute. It's not. Sorry, it's an event.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I wish the best for him. Flip side, though, the Dodgers, their brand new pitcher Yamamoto, who they signed for a shit ton of money, he hasn't been doing so hot in spring training. He's got an 8.38 ERA over nine innings and a nearly two whip, which, Carly, what is that abbreviation for?
Walks and hits innings pitch. So it's walks plus hits divided by innings pitch. So essentially he allows two base runners per inning.
Not ideal.
No.
But how much of that is his talent level, his acclimation towards American baseball, and how much of that is the fact that the Dodgers have their infield so fucky right now with Mookie Betts playing shortstop, Lux playing second base? Like, what is going on with them?
Great question. And I am pro Mookie Betts. I think Mookie Betts is one of the most impressive athletes to play professional baseball in a very long time. That said, part of me just thinks, like, for some reason, shortstop just ain't it. Like, it just feels, it feels to me like the first, and we'll talk about this probably next week, but I'll give you a sneak peek and say that I don't think the Dodgers are going to be as dominant or as good as everybody thinks they're going to be this year.
I agree. And I think it comes down to less about how their big free agents will perform. Like, I think Glasnow, Yamamoto, I think they'll figure it out. I think they just are depending too much on talent like Betts and Freeman to carry this thing, that there's only so much those guys can do.
Agreed.
But we'll get into that next week. Shohei Ohtani's also apparently going to start a throwing progression once they get back to America. So that's, I didn't think that he was that far along in his recovery, but apparently that's cool. We might be seeing him pitch this year, which I don't think anybody expected.
No, it wouldn't surprise me, but I'd be a little surprised if he did, given what we know, especially plus his history. This is his second, isn't it? Correct. Yeah, this is the second. Yeah, I wouldn't. That's just
yeah,
me.
Just let him. I mean, the fact that he's even playing at all is kind of a risk, but we'll see how it goes. Follow-up from last episode, Carl's doppelganger, Joey Votto, he has finally made a deal. He had a minor league deal with the Blue Jays and the spring training invite. It's his hometown team. He's a Canadian native, a Toronto native. He was super happy to be with the Blue Jays. I always love when players can show a photo from when they were kids or when they were babies in, like, I'm a future Blue Jay. And Joey's like, I finally did it, Ma. He hit a homer off the first pitch that he saw in spring training. I really hope he makes the major league roster because the baseball without Joey Votto is going to be really sad.
Yeah, but he's still young. You know, he's only 40. And I mean young in, like, civilian terms. Not
baseball
in,
years,
right,
too.
Baseball, yeah, I mean, no, he's Methuselah in baseball. He's basically 800 years old. But so he's obviously put his – he's cast his freak flag. He's showing people he's a fun, funny guy. He'll definitely have a career after baseball. I would love to see him stick, but roster construction being what it is these days, where you have five bench players and really effectively you only have four bench players because one of them is your backup catcher. And positional versatility is the name of the game these days. So unless he can really still really bang, like, you know, MVP Joey Votto, I just don't know if he's gonna. I don't know if he's gonna stick with him.
They also have a roster full of DH type guys.
Yeah.
I mean, if he's competing with Guerrero for first base, Vogelbeck for DH. I mean, these are all the same caliber of player. Maybe not. I mean, I shouldn't say that because Votto's been better than both of them throughout his career. Yeah. But as they all stand right now, it's hard to say that he'll make the roster. But we'll see. We'll cross our fingers. A guy that won't make the roster, at least with the team that he thought he would, was J.D. Davis because he's been released by the Giants. This is another follow-up from a story we told last week. When they signed Matt Chapman, you and I were asking, what the fuck are they going to do with J.D. Davis? He had just won an arbitration case for $6.9 million, and they released him. So now they only owe him $1 million. And he signed a one-year $2.5 million deal with the A's. This sucks. I mean, yeah. I know this is business. I've read that the Giants players were not happy about this. I assume Davis isn't happy about it either, especially since it's the A's. Like, that's got to be the last place any guy wants to go as a free agent. You know, I think a lot of people have seen this as sort of a needlessly cruel move by the Giants. They could have traded him. I don't know. Like, yep. It just seems wild that they'd go to arbitration. A team that I read has only been to arbitration twice in the last 20 years or something crazy like that. Mm-hmm. One of them being this time. Argue that the guy deserves less than he gets paid. Lose that case because the courts decide he deserves that $6.9 million. And then go, fuck it, we'll sign another better third baseman. And cast him off into the sea. There's also drama about his agent. I don't know how much of that we believe. We were talking about that a little bit last week, but I don't know. Where do you stand on the J.D. Davis situation?
It's all fucky. And I completely agree with the Giants players. I thought about it later, and I did some research on it. And so the Giants exploited a loophole in the collective bargaining agreement, which you can believe is going to come up in the next collective bargaining agreement. These contracts for arbitration eligible players are fully guaranteed if you negotiate it with the team before you go to arbitration.
Oh, shit.
That is the bullshit part with the Giants. So what you just said about the whole, like, oh, they've only gone to arbitration twice in 20 years.
They
gave him the offer 1 hour before the deadline, which, you know, people are busy. You know, people are doing shit. They can't sit there by their phone and check their email. So the arbiter, you know, the arbiter sided with J.D. Davis. Great, I get $6.9 million. Not so fast. As soon as they signed Chapman, they dumped his ass and exploited the loophole that guarantees the contracts only if they're negotiated before the deal. So how do I feel about it? I've never liked the Giants that much to begin with. I don't know why. There's something about them's always rubbed me the wrong way.
2012 World Series, maybe? I don't know.
Oh, I mean, even
that's why I don't like them.
Even before that, I don't know. Like, again, I can't. There's no rational reason for why. But yeah, I think it's bullshit. I think it's just a bunch of bullshit. They fucked a guy over. And also, to your point, Trevor May, who's great on YouTube, he said something. He went to Oakland for a reason that a lot of guys go, which is it's low pressure. Like, no, mm-hmm. you don't have the eyes on you. And that might be good for J.D. Davis right now to just sort of, you know, go get a couple $1 million, lick your wounds, lay low. You know, you don't have to move far. You know, you're right across the bridge. And so for a lot of guys, it's a good place to just sort of, you know, get your shit together. I mean, it sucks that the owner is John Fisher. But yeah, it might not be the best. It might not be the worst thing that ever happened to J.D. Davis, but it is pretty shitty.
I feel like he's been the victim of a lot of shitty moves over the last couple of years. So I hope after the Oakland year, he has a great comeback year and is able to sign a better deal. We'll end this on a couple of higher notes, I think. Jazz Chisholm, Marlins outfielder, he announced that this year he's going to step up his game, he's going to improve his diet, and he will no longer be eating McDonald's every single day.
Good.
How the fuck, as a Major League Baseball player, do you eat McDonald's every single day? What?
Now, to be fair, there are hacks, you know, where you can, like, you know, get a quarter pounder with no cheese and don't get the fries, and that's not terrible, but that burger is, you know, like, part sawdust. It's not the highest quality food, but it'll get you by. But you're right. If I was a professional athlete, once I got that bag, I would do everything in my power to, like, hire a chef or, like, get that food delivery service that Factor. I'd get Factor or something.
Don't get
like,
that. Don't get that.
Okay, don't.
It's
don't
a waste
get that.
Of money.
Not a sponsor.
No.
And never will be, apparently, now. Especially since they're now owned by HelloFresh, apparently. It sounds like you've had a bad experience with Factor that we'll talk about offline.
They're just weird. I don't know. It's, like I said, it's a waste of money. It's like classed up Lunchables that tastes terrible, and they're only like, I don't know, 150 calories, but they treat it like it's a full ass meal. So you eat it and you're like, I'm still hungry, but that was my meal for the day. What the fuck am I supposed to do?
I would have to eat four of those to even come close.
I think
close.
The average person would, yeah.
Yeah. I'm 6'2", 200 pounds. I'm a big guy. I just ate 12 nuggets for dinner. I can't do a fucking, you know, half a cutlet and some steamed broccoli.
I'd rather have McDonald's every day than try Factor again.
Yeah, put that on your ads, Factor.
Finally, in our news section of the day, MLB The Show 24 has broads in it.
I do not stand by Matt's usage of the word broads.
That's how I kept seeing it online. What are these broads doing in the show? I was like, do we go back to old school misogyny? What the fuck?
Yeah, like our modern versions of misogyny weren't good enough. Yeah.
Yeah.
Had to go back and use the word broads. And obviously you are using the word in jest. But yes, it is correct. For a creative player, you can now, in Road to the Show, which is their creative player mode, you can create women characters. And also, right now, they release cards throughout the year for Diamond Dynasty. There is a card for Toni Stone, who was the first professional first woman to play professional baseball in the Negro Leagues, and she is carrying my Diamond Dynasty team right now. She is one of my favorite types of cards, which is the high contact, like mid power. She's like got 108 contact and like 57 power.
You know, holy shit, that's
like,
awesome.
You know, like the Tony Gwynn cards are always like 125 and 70 contact. Like it's sort of like that. And if you still get it in the sweet spot, that thing will still go. She's got the most RBIs on my team. She's got four home runs. She's got decent speed. She's good with the glove at second base. I'm all about Toni Stone. And I got that card because they do this great thing where they have storylines where you can play moments from the Negro League players of the past, like Josh Gibson, Buck O'Neill, Rube Foster's in there, Toni Stone, and there's one who I'm forgetting. But if you don't already have it, it's available, I think, still for pre-order right now. It's another great version of the game. I love it to death.
Hell yeah.
Sorry for rambling about that. I could do a podcast about the show.
And I think our listeners probably know that by now because we definitely talk about it. But I think it's fun. I'm so fucking tired of whiny men online just everything is woke. Everything is like, there was a trending topic on Twitter this week where a lot of Nazi adjacent people are complaining that all video games are exhibiting hate against white men. And everyone's like, what the fuck are you talking about? And this game wasn't necessarily part of that conversation, but like a lot of people were upset. Women in my baseball game, that's unrealistic. That's not real. It's like women play baseball and have.
Yep.
And it's like, this is also, I mean, I think Madden is probably the only one that doesn't, but I know NHL and NBA both have women in their games.
Mm-hmm.
And I've played with them. And there's not any substantial difference, really, other than the costumes look a little different, you know?
Yeah, that's it. The player models are different. Like, guys, women are around you. They're all around you. Take a look around. There might be a woman sitting next to you right now, if you're lucky, if you're into that sort of thing.
A woman just set history, you know, as not just women's sports, but all basketball in general. She's the Caitlin Clark is who I'm talking about, mm-hmm. is the points leader. And that was a record that had been in stone for a good 60 years before she broke it. And I don't know, man, this is life. And people just need to grow up. You don't have to play it, or you don't have to play as a woman if it bothers you so much.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like nobody from San Diego Studios comes to your home and puts a gun to your head and says, pick a girl. Like, that's not what happens. This is not how it happens. But even with Caitlin Clark, dudes were twisting themselves into knots, finding reasons to shit on her, saying, well, you know, when Pete Maravich played, there wasn't a three-pointer. But yeah, he took 874 shots a game because he was Pistol Pete just hucking it up there. I mean, he took like, I think he averaged like 38 shots a game. Like, I'm being mildly facetious.
Okay.
But the point is, TLDR, it's fine, guys. It's fine. Women are everywhere. Women can do everything that you can do. And in most of your mediocre ass cases, probably better than you. So yeah. Maybe just chill the fuck out.
I know for a fact my wife can hit a baseball better than I can. I know for a fact.
Doesn't surprise me.
All right, let's move on to our main story here.
That wasn't a knock on you. That was more of like thumbs up to your wife. And
yeah,
not
my wife
like,
is cool.
Yeah.
But I can't hit a baseball to save my life. Okay, moving on. So as we mentioned, we got this world tour. And they're starting to call it the world tour now.
Sorry, what? I was looking at our predictions.
Oh, scroll past that. We'll come back. They're calling it the world tour now. Playing international games isn't new, but as part of the collective bargaining agreement that came about because of the 2022 lockout, MLB announced a plan for more international games played during the regular season, and they kind of set this window of 2023 to 2026 where they're going to start to ramp this up. Last year, we saw that series between the Padres and the Giants in Mexico City. Extremely memorable for the insane home runs, not just the amount, but the distance and height. Go back and watch some clips from at least the first game of that series because the bombs they were hitting were insane. And already this year, we've had a Red Sox and Rays game or a series of spring training games in Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic. Later this year, the Mets and Phillies will play in London, and the Astros and Rockies will also play in Mexico City. So we are going international in the league this year, and of course, we've got the Seoul series playing right now.
Wait, the Astros are going to play in Mexico City?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I hope Yordan Alvarez is healthy. I want to see him hit a 535-foot nuke.
That'll be insane. Wasn't it like Machado that hit like that the biggest one in Mexico City last year? And he's not exactly like the most powerful hitter on that team.
No, he doesn't have the same pop that he used to. But yeah, he got a hold of one and throttled it.
I think Alvarez might hit a 700-footer. I don't know,
Jesus.
Man. It may seem a little silly to kick off the season full week before opening day and across the ocean, but it's actually more common than you'd think. And we decided that we kind of want to look at some of the games and series that have been played overseas across history of baseball. And a caveat, I started saying overseas or international or at least like outside of North America, because after typing all this up, I realized, oh yeah, we've had Canadian teams for a long, long time. There's been many games played in Toronto and Montreal. So obviously I'm not talking about Canada, but this is sort of where it comes about. The first series was played in 1996. Mets and Padres faced off in Monterrey, Mexico. First regular season games ever played south of the border. The series was dubbed La Primera Serie. Temperatures reached over 100 degrees. They had a mariachi band entertaining between innings. And this whole thing came about, as I mentioned earlier, the Padres, you're going to hear their names a lot because I think they kind of want to be the international team. Padres CEO at the time, Larry Lucchino, wanted to combat a GOP convention, which was being hosted in San Diego, by becoming Mexico's team, which, like, that's awesome.
I love Larry Lucchino. Who knew?
Yeah. Oh, the GOP is going to be in town. Fuck it. Let's go to Mexico for a week. many people found it a success, players, management alike. A couple players weren't super happy with the high temperatures, the ill-kept field. They had a lot of stomach issues from the food. For some reason, some complained about a language barrier. I'm like, were there far less Spanish speakers in the league in the 90s? Because that I can't imagine a player complaining about a language barrier in a Spanish-speaking country now. Like,
yeah.
The Padres took 2 out of 3 in that series. They came back in 99 to host the Rockies. And I say host, and obviously they're Mexico's team now. So they host the Rockies for a single game in Monterrey, and then they would host the Dodgers in 2018. I don't know why Monterrey specifically. Obviously, now we're playing in Mexico City, which is a little bit different. The Dodgers actually pitched a combined no-hitter, their first franchise combined no-hitter during that 2018 series. So a couple other examples of international games. Every 4 years, beginning in 2000, MLB's hosted a series of early season games in Japan's famous Tokyo Dome. The very first matchup of the first... Wait, what did I... What is that? The first matchup was also the first series of regular season games played outside of North America.
There you go.
There we go. As the Cubs and Mets kicked off the 2000 season. Is that the Mets again? Oh, wow. The Mets are very international as well. The week had a very similar feel to what's going on with the Seoul games right now. They played exhibitions against local talent as well as playing each other. And it was kind of cool because you had players and managers like Bobby Valentine, Pat Mahomes, Brian Williams, Damon Buford of the Cubs and the Mets. All of them had been playing on Japanese teams in the past. So that was sort of like a quasi homecoming for them.
Wait, Pat Mahomes, father of former 37th round Detroit Tigers draft pick Patrick Mahomes?
Yes, believe it or not, he used to pitch for the New York Mets.
Huh.
And one of the teams in Japan. I didn't write down which, but
not important.
No. The two game series was a sellout, and the Tokyo Dome seats 55,000 people. So that's a pretty hefty sellout even by American standards. The two game series was a sellout and a split. Each team took a game. The Japan series saw the Rays and the Yankees play in 04, the Red Sox and A's in 08, the Mariners and A's in 12 and 19. Why the A's so much? I don't know. But the 2019 series also saw Ichiro play his last professional game and officially retired afterward, like immediately after the game. I guess I didn't remember Ichiro playing all the way until 2019, nor do I remember him rejoining the Mariners, but that's cool.
Yeah, he was doing his best Ricky Henderson impression towards the end of his career there. Like, he was with the Marlins for a minute. Yeah, I know. He played with the Yankees for a hot second. I feel like there might be another team in there somewhere, but he did, in fact, go back to the Mariners, where he's now like a special assistant. Saw a cool video of him playing catch with Julio Rodriguez. That was really one of those things that you love to see, like the past and the future, you know, the past and the present, sort of the future with him being so young.
International games have become more and more common over the last decade or so. In 2014, the Dodgers and Diamondbacks kicked off a season in Sydney, Australia. Did you hear that? With a two-game Dodgers sweep. I'm never going to do that again.
No. When you did that, I blinked. I blinked as you did that, and I thought that all of a sudden Liam Hendricks was on the podcast.
What are you doing? Cat just knocked something over. So that was in Sydney. Another pair of series were played in Monterrey, this time without the Padres, in 2019. A Cardinals-Reds split and an Astros sweep of the Angels. And 2019 also saw the first London series between the Red Sox and the Yankees, where the Pinstripe Papas swept the Crimson Stocking Crew. I think I got a little bored while I was writing. The London series is now set to be an alternating regular event, and COVID-19 kind of threw that through a loop, but essentially they're going to do a series in London, and then the next year they're going to do another one in Paris. So this year they're doing London again. It'll be the Phillies and the Mets. Last year was also the Cubs and the Cubs and the Cardinals. Yeah. And then next year we'll have a Paris series. So that should be fun. Baseball all around the world. Now how about world peace? That's a segment.
Yep. There you go. Well, I started laughing because you put the second part of the episode above the first one. So
that's just poor time management right there.
Nah, it's whatever. It's fine. Listen, folks, we are a two-man crew here, so sometimes things get a little out of whack.
That's why it's a fun podcast, right?
I'd like to think so. But it gets out of whack, not unlike some of our predictions from last year. And Matt was very kind to we did two prediction episodes last year, and you mashed them into one and re-released them last week because we thought it would be fun to put those back out there and refresh everyone's memory about how terrible our picks were. But if you haven't listened to that episode, let us refresh your memory. Was it you that made this first one for the bad, or was it me?
I don't know. I think it was both of us. I didn't write down exactly who picked what, just out of fairness to both of us. But yeah, at least one of us decided that Texas would be last place in the West, which was wild. Now, granted, that AL West run, like, I didn't even think going into September you would have predicted that the Mariners would be out of it, because that was an insane final sprint to the finish between Texas and Seattle, and then Houston kind of swooping in at the end.
Yeah, it was the most exciting race, at least for the second half of the season. It was fascinating, but I would not have predicted even a little that it would turn out the way that it did.
No. Well, the other one was that the Padres and Giants, which I also thought was like wild that we decided that the Dodgers, Padres, and Giants would all tie, which was actually probably closer. We probably thought an AL West situation was more likely for the NL West.
That's what we were doing. That's the problem. We made the mistake. We actually meant National League, or we meant American League. We said National League, you guys. That's,
there you go.
fixing, amending the record.
This one was definitely you. The Cardinals would would run away with the division.
Yeah, call me out if you know it's me. Call me out. I fucked that one up.
But I don't know what. I guess I don't really understand what went wrong, because on paper I kind of still agree that Cardinals team should have been much better. And if it was a coaching thing, I think we kind of landed on that a couple times last year. It was a talent thing, like a lot of their pitchers were underperforming, a lot of their position players were too. I don't know, just an interesting case study. But a lot of people are still saying that the Cardinals are going to be good this year. So we'll see if they make the same mistakes.
Yeah, I remember saying that I thought Jordan Walker would win Rookie of the Year. But I hedged and I said, but I would also I also think Corbin Carroll's going to have a good year.
Yes.
So I kind of got it, but I really did think that Jordan Walker was going to be the breakout rookie last year.
Yeah.
So I missed that one.
This one was definitely me. I said that the Mets and Braves would tie. that was so wrong. So wrong. As probably wrong as anyone could ever be on this list, except for this one. This was another Matt. Diaz's injury, that's Edwin Diaz, the closer for the Mets. He injured himself at the very tail end of the World Baseball Classic and basically was out for the whole season. But I said at that time, which was very fresh after the injury, wasn't a big deal because the Mets would perform enough to not need a dynamite closer or even good relief pitchers. Who could have thunk?
Not me. No, seriously, not me.
I was anybody. Right there with you.
I really thought the Mets were going to have a good year last year. But
on paper.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they play on grass.
Yeah. Our MVP picks were Yordan Alvarez and Trey Turner. And in comparison, Alvarez had 170 OPS plus versus Otani's 184 plus. Otani actually has his pitching stats as well. And Otani didn't even play the last month of the season. Alvarez's 170 OPS plus is still phenomenal, but and would have probably gotten him better if he played in the National League, but can't compare to Shohei Otani being who he is doing what he does. And then Trey Turner, obviously, he had a really, really slow season, didn't really pick up until the playoffs started. Nowhere close to Ronald Acuña Jr.'s 168 OPS plus.
No.
I still don't think those were bad picks. Like, out of all the picks, I felt like those two might have worked. I mean, we were coming off of the World Baseball Classic. Turner was the hero. I even said it at the time. I still believe this, that had the U.S. won, Turner would have easily been the U.S.'s WBC MVP.
Yeah. Absolutely. I really love how everybody framed Trey Turner's like late season resurgence when it was basically like, yeah, the Philadelphia fans just weren't mean to him. They just weren't themselves. instead of hucking batteries at him, they decided to be nice and say, hey, man, it's a hard game. I'm going to clap for you anyway. And Trey was like, oh, good. And he played better. Like that was the whole, that was the narrative because he plays in Philadelphia.
He made like a billboard. He brought a billboard right by the stadium that was like, "Thank you, Philly, for believing in me."
Thank you for rejecting your baser instincts to just shit on me because I didn't perform.
Yeah.
Thank you, Philadelphia. But yeah, I felt really good about that pick coming off the World Baseball Classic. That one was me. I know that was me, and I also know that the Cy Young picks were mine as well. And holy shit, do I feel terrible about my National League Cy Young pick in Sandy.
Did you curse Sandy?
I think I did. I picked Sandy Alcantara to repeat, and I went nuts and thought Ohtani would win a Cy Young. I thought he was going to be that dominant on both sides of the ball last year. He was good. He's really good, but he wasn't Cy Young good.
Yeah. I mean, decent pitcher. And in a year of decent pitchers winning the Cy Young, could have happened maybe if he was just a little bit better, but he didn't.
Yeah, that's it. He just didn't. It's hard. It's a hard game. Baseball hard. There
Rookie
you go.
Of the year picks is another one that's like, how could we have known? Grayson Rodriguez, Jordan Walker, Anthony Volpe. I think Walker didn't survive in the bigs, right? I think he got called back down pretty quick.
Yeah, they sent him down pretty quick, but he did get called back up later in the season. But
yeah.
He didn't perform at a rookie of the year level.
But also surrounded by less than stellar talents with the Cardinals. Grayson Rodriguez, I think also kind of a surprise because everyone's saying this year, Gunnar Henderson, rookie of the year, most likely. And it's like, I don't know, man. Like, you can't, how do you predict that? How do you really predict it? Other than everybody thought Corbin Carroll would get it, and he did.
It's you don't know. It's just it's so difficult. But that's what's so exciting about it. Not to wildly go off on a tangent, but it's sort of like what's going on with the Detroit Tigers right now. There are a lot of people saying, bring Ryan Kreidler. Ryan Kreidler's having a great spring. He's got to be better than Javi Baez. You just want the new thing. You want the new thing who's unproven, you know, so the new thing is exciting. Like it could be great. You know, we got Colt Keith now. This could be awesome, but it could also be terrible. So I get the excitement, but it's hard to predict who's actually going to stick in the league.
We at least know what to expect with Javi Baez.
Yeah.
If he does well, not great, well, if he's at replacement level, that would be a shock.
Yeah. I'll happily accept 1.5 war.
Batting war. I think fielding war, he's actually that good, but
yeah,
just above Mendoza line, I think.
That's all I'm asking.
We actually had some good predictions last year, though, and I did want to highlight them, especially these couple of the comeback players of the year. Cody Bellinger and Aroldis Chapman were two people we flagged for having bounce back years. You were big on the Bellinger train. You just had a sense about Bellinger, and you were completely right. I mean, he had a huge year.
And my hunch, shock of all shocks, because he was my favorite player or one of my favorite players to use in MLB The Show. That's it. Plus, he's still young. He was rookie of the year. He was MVP. I just didn't think that he was that done that soon. So I had a hunch, I guessed right. Chapman didn't get, you know, comeback player of the year level, but he was a hell of a lot better than a lot of people would have expected.
To have the season that he did where he signed a pretty low ball deal for the Royals, and then was pretty sought after at the deadline, then played for the World Series winning Rangers and didn't shit the bed entirely in the playoffs.
Yeah.
What more can you expect for a late era Aroldis Chapman? I mean, like, this is now his third World Series winning team or second?
Cubs in 2016. This one. I feel like there might be a third one. I'll do a quick Googling.
But either way, I mean, when he was with the Cubs, he was shitting the bed a couple times in big, big situations to a point where they couldn't trust him to carry the ball. And one of the things that the Rangers really struggled with in that World Series run was their bullpen. And, well, their starting pitching, too. I mean, there were a couple times where you and I really looked at the situation. We said, are they going to make it? Because they're running out Scherzer and... Dane Dunning. Like, guys that just, you couldn't trust to go more than four innings. And then their bullpen was non-existent. And Chapman was surprisingly pretty solid.
Alarmingly so. And yeah, it was his second. It was just the Cubs in 16 and the Rangers last year. We also talked about Liam Hendricks. We said that he would win Comeback Player of the Year. Is that correct?
That was fresh off of his cancer diagnosis. And I think both of us were in agreement that if he was truly coming back to play this year, or, you know, 2023, then he should run away with the reward, because, like, to come back from that, especially that quickly, and he did. He had a separate injury that took him out for the rest of the season, but he came back and he was pretty solid when he came back. And to beat cancer and then come back into baseball and play at that level, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and we've seen that happen a couple of times in recent years. John Lester, Trey Mancini, was it that?
Oh, really?
With had Baltimore, or now with Houston, I think, or Chicago. I can't remember where he's at now. And Liam Hendricks. Like, it's insane that they can come back from fucking cancer to become, to regain even a modicum of their ability to play a professional sport is a testament to their toughness. I mean, their mental toughness.
Within one season, too.
Yes.
I mean, that's big. I correctly predicted that Ohtani would be the MVP. I even asked you, is it too cliche to pick Ohtani? And you said, no, I think he could earn that. I think that he's definitely got the stuff. And I said, okay, I'll do you one better. I think he'll pitch a perfect game, or at least a no-hitter. Now, he did not do that, but he did pitch a shutout one-hitter against our Detroit Tigers. And then the next game hit like three home runs or something like that. It was a doubleheader, and he pitched a shutout one hitter and then hit like two or three home runs in the second half. And so I say that's basically a no hitter.
It's good enough. I think it's less likely to happen than a no hitter.
Yeah.
So it's therefore more impressive.
I agree. I called that the Padres would massively underperform and that their lineup was not as good as the baseball world thought it would be. The baseball world treated the 2023 Padres like they are currently treating the 2024 Dodgers.
Yes.
That the pitching was lights out, that the roster was stacked. I think people are a little more realistic about them this year, and not much has changed. They got rid of Soto, but, you know, and Snell, but they haven't like improved all that much this year. And they've got great talent. They've got Ha-Seong Kim. They've got Tatis. They've got, Bogarts hasn't been as good, but good guys. I was just like, I don't think that this is the 110 win team that people think they were. And they were not. They were pretty average.
Yeah. Despite having excellent pitching, they had one of the best pitching staffs in all of baseball, but they were still mediocre at best as a team. It was really weird. Like, they underperformed and did so in a very weird way.
Yeah. Then they cursed themselves. Like, early in the season, they had a graphic of Kershaw crying on their scoreboard after the Dodgers lost, and then they went on a massive losing streak after that.
And then Peter Seidler, their owner, passed.
Yeah, what a shame.
I didn't mean to imply that the Padres' performance killed their owner. I just...
Well, it didn't help.
No, it certainly did not.
Cy Young pick, I don't remember who had this pick, Gerrit Cole. I think the general consensus on this podcast was, well, it's about time he gets it right. Yeah. But I said, I think he definitely gets it if the Yankees play well this year and if the Yankees have an amazing season. Well, he got it, and the Yankees did not have an amazing season. So,
no, but he did. He had such a great season that it was impossible to give it to anybody else, apparently.
I don't think anybody came close.
Yeah, not in the American League. I don't feel like the American League. I'm struggling to remember right now how it all shook out. But
closer in the National, definitely. But yeah, I think it'll be a very different situation this year with Yamamoto and Glasnow now in the National League. Like, this, it's going to be an interesting shakeup.
Agreed.
And then our Rookie of the Year picks, Corbin Carroll and Gunnar Henderson, were the Rookies of the Year.
Yeah, there you go.
Ding, ding, ding. And then I also was like, you know, Kodai Senga would qualify. He was the runner-up in the National League. So I think that is also a big win for us. So we're not complete idiots, is no. what I'm saying.
No. We know as much as you do. Maybe more. I probably know. I'm kidding. I don't.
This fantasy league's gonna go really rough for me.
you know, I'll be your shadow manager. If you have any questions, you send it to me, and we'll keep it. We won't tell anybody that you work with that I did that, unless I do terrible, and then you can be like, yeah, my idiot co-host, he sunk us. But now that we talked about the predictions from last year, we did say that we ran an out of the park simulation. For this season, which we did, and I'm going to bring that up on the screen according to my simulation of Out of the Park Baseball. And there are a couple of shocks here. The biggest one, immediately in the National League West, Los Angeles won the division but didn't run away with it. According to Out of the Park, they took first place with 86 wins, narrowly edging the Colorado Rockies, who got one of the wild cards.
Huh.
Right?
Okay.
The Brewers took the Central Division. The Braves took the East. The Reds, the Cubs, and the Rockies all got in on the playoffs. And in the American League side, look at Baltimore with another 109 Jesus. Wins. Tampa Bay coming in last in the division, which was kind of a shock. The Yankees came in second and clinched a wild card. Cleveland took the American League Central. And then the Twins and the White Sox came in second and third, respectively, and both garnered wild cards. The Detroit Tigers finished 69-93, tied for last place with the fucking Royals. Eat shit out of the park. Unrealistic. Not buying it again. I'm just kidding. I'll buy it again. And then in the AL West, the Astros won it pretty handily with 89 wins. Seattle was finished second in the division with an 81-81 record. The Rangers slipping all the way back to fourth place. The Oakland A's, the only team in baseball, the other team in baseball to lose 100 games. The Washington Nationals apparently lost 100 games. I didn't capture all of the playoff matchups, but what you need to know was that according to Out of the Park 24, your World Series champion this year is going to be the Baltimore Orioles, who in six games took the title from the Milwaukee Brewers.
Huh.
Yeah, yeah, right? I'm going to stop sharing that because that's superfluous to our conversation now. And I can send, unless you want me to bring that back up, was there anything you wanted to take a look at or talk about?
No, I mean, I'll talk about it in general. There's some stuff that I'm like, yeah, I could totally see that. I could see the Orioles having another great season. The Braves, obviously, I think will perform pretty well. And some of those fringe teams like the Brewers. I don't believe that a lot of that is possible, that the Texas could slip that much, or Tampa Bay. I saw the Mets in third place above the Marlins. I don't know about that.
Yeah.
The Tigers being fourth place, tied for last. I don't know about that.
Yeah. Oh, I and another that, one. The Diamondbacks at 70-92 finished in last in the National League West.
I just don't know. Like, obviously, baseball is kind of a fickle thing when it comes to that, and you never really know how a team is going to do year to year. But you'd like to think that some of these teams are going to improve, and I'm interested how this algorithm figures this out, you know?
Yeah, and there were a lot of, you know what was really interesting? I didn't collect all, like, the league leaders and everything, but I never saw Shohei Ohtani's name once in, like, the National League leaders in home runs, RBI. I remember at the end of the season, Michael Harris was like leading the National League with a 346 batting average. For a long time throughout the season, Colt Keith was doing real good. Like it, as it simulates names change in the league leader columns, and for most of the first half of the season, he was contending for the batting title. He was in the race for RBI leader, but then only ended up finishing fourth in the Rookie of the Year, which went to in the American League, it was Jackson Holliday. And then I had to, according to Out of the Park 2024 or 25, the National League Rookie of the Year is going to be a man who is a real person and not a person that the game just made up, Graham Pauly.
Okay.
Who is a Padres farmhand. He's apparently, according to MLB.com, he's the Padres' eighth best prospect right now in the real world, because again, he is a real person that I had to look up while we were recording this episode. And he's having a really great spring. He's traveling with the team to Korea with the Padres. So again, real person, saw his face in a picture, real guy, not a fake guy. I think I mentioned it earlier. I could not find the MVPs. I was scouring my emails in the game. They just didn't think I needed to know who the MVPs were. So fuck me, I guess. But your Cy Young winners in the American League was Corbin Burns, and Max Fried took home the award in the National League. And then the weirdest thing that I saw was that the Detroit Tigers' Spencer Torkelson was a Gold Glove winner in right field.
Okay. It's doing something wrong, Carl. I don't trust this as far as I can throw it.
Now, I remember seeing a notification telling me that Kerry Carpenter was injured for something, and I was just trying to hurry up and get the sim done. So I was like, who fucking cares? But yeah, at the end of the season, it said Spencer Torkelson, and they don't call it the Gold Glove because they don't have the permissions from,
sure,
you know, Louisville Slugger to give that out. So I can't remember what they call it, but he did win it for his play in right field of all places. He also had a 7-game getting on base streak at some point. And Alex Lang had a 20 consecutive save streak at some point throughout the season. I just picked the Tigers as the team that I ran. So that's how I had all this information. But there you go. So according to the one simulation that one random person, it is going to be the Baltimore Orioles over the Milwaukee Brewers in the World Series this year. If you run the simulation, it'll probably come up with the same thing because it's never wrong. So congratulations in advance to Spencer Torkelson on his Gold Glove in right field.
Well, last year I think you predicted a Blue Jays Cardinals World Series the park. So
yeah,
don't think either of them even made the playoffs.
No, and I remember thinking that the Blue Jays could do it like IRL. I think IRL, I predicted like a Blue Jays Mets World Series.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck that one.
No. Well, tell you what we're gonna do next week. We're gonna figure it out. We're going to look at Fangraphs. We're going to look at Vegas. We're going to look at The Athletic and their professional writers. Every source that we can find and make our own informed picks. We might run an MLB The Show simulation. I don't know. But we're going to basically give our predictions for the season, because next week is the first week of baseball. And we're going to talk about it. We're going to give all of our predictions for the 2024 season, who's going to win the Cy Young, the MVP, all that good stuff. And if we have time, maybe talk a little bit about some of the changes happening with stadiums, maybe some new food items that are getting brought up. That's always a fun topic to discuss on this show.
Yeah.
And how just excited we are for this season to start. I probably say it every year now, but I feel like it could not come soon enough. I'm sitting here just giddy for it to start. And I got my tickets for Mets Tigers April 1st. I will be seated for that. Hopefully it's not too cold.
Yeah. I won't have that problem because I can confirm, I mentioned it, I can confirm that on April 23rd, I will be checking off Globe Life Field from my journey through all 30 ballparks. I've even booked a 90-minute pre-game tour through the facility, so I'm going to try and capture all kinds of cool video and turn it around and turn it into something that we can drop on the socials, because I'm trying to be better about that sort of thing. So I'll be checking that out on April 23rd. I can't wait to talk about that. I'm so stoked. The season, it just I've spent the last couple months rewatching Ken Burns Baseball and Bull Durham, and at one point I almost watched Mr. 3000. Like, I was so desperate for baseball.
Love that movie.
It's such a good movie. I really should rewatch it. But been desperate.
No,
for
it's
it.
A bad movie, but it's a good movie.
Yes, it's a good bad movie. Bernie Mac as a convincing baseball player is not it.
No, but if you're like us, you're binge watching Mr. 3000, and you're going to join us again next week for Put Me in Coach.
Put Me in Coach is an Arctic Sounds original podcast hosted by Matt Coggins and Carl Mizell. Theme music is by Quack Quack Seatback. Edited and produced by Matt Coggins. Check out the footnotes of this episode to see links to all the great highlights, articles, and sources we mentioned on the podcast today, as well as the full theme song and ways to get in touch with us. For more, find us on Twitter and Instagram at PutMeInPod or at our website, PutMeInCoachPod.com.